I have with me today Lierre Kiess, who's the author of a fascinating and very important new book, The Vegetarian Myth, with a little subtitle of Food Justice and Sustainability. Lierre, tell me a little bit of your background as you go over where, you know, strict vegetarianism, veganism, what happened to your health because of it, and how you found the light, so to speak, and changed.
Well, I was a vegan for 20 years.
Wow.
I started at a very young age. I was only 16.
Okay.
And I heard the vegan message, as I think a lot of people do. You know, you experience this as a spiritual transformation almost, where, you know, you hear that you can save the planet, you can feed hungry people, you can, you know, help animals not be killed, and you'll do great things for your health. And so it's all one big package. It makes total sense. And if you're an idealistic, you know, young person like I was, what was going to stop me? Nothing. I mean, this just seemed like, you know, absolutely the thing to do.
Sure.
So I took it up. And at that point, there weren't even that many vegans in the world. I mean, now you can get all kinds of products in the store, but I mean, we didn't have things like soy ice cream. I mean, we had to really suffer. You know, the only treats we got were things that we made. You know, you couldn't buy little fake meat products and stuff. The soy milk in little containers really hadn't been invented either. So, you know, we really had to make do with what we thought was appropriate. So I'm just saying that, like, you really had to mean it back then.
Sure.
This was in, you know, 1981 or so.
And obviously from the point of view of the idealism of, you know, hey, let's treat animals well and stop killing them, and, you know, let's do things that are humane. From that point of view, I can even understand that, even though I'm obviously on the other side of the fence. But, you know, what you're really looking at is that, well, that's not the issue, because it's not that we're treating animals badly because people should or shouldn't be vegetarian. It's because organizations that are huge and very wealthy don't care anything about the animals. So I, just as much as you, and I'm sure you still feel that way, hate the way animals are being treated. But that's a different issue.
Yeah, and it's one of the big reasons that I wrote the book, was because I feel like the left in general and the environmental movement in particular has really been led astray by the vegetarian myth.
Sure.
So we're told that we're going to save the planet, and we're going to save animals, and we're going to save hungry people. It all seems to hang together, but the only reason that we don't know better is because of ignorance. This is not a problem of values. And I'm very clear in the first chapter. I want to make that point really clear. This is not a conflict of values. The only values that are going to save this planet are compassion, sustainability, justice, anything that questions human hubris or human entitlement. Those are still the guiding principles of my life. That was what, you know, drove me to veganism. But it's a problem of information, because we do not know what the nature of agriculture is. We don't understand the inherent destructiveness of agricultural way of life. And because of that, we're not able to make the proper decisions about what, in fact, would be sustainable and what, in fact, would save animals and what, in fact, would save people from hunger.
Sure.
So the problem is not those underlying values, and I just want to make sure everybody hears me say that at least once. The problem really is about ignorance, and nobody told me all the rest of this information. I had to put it all together, and it took years. And every little bit of information that I gained about the nature of agriculture was in direct conflict with an identity. I mean, the thing about being a vegan is it's not just what you eat. It's who you are.
Right.
So any little thing that, you know, sort of trips the wire and makes you feel nervous, new information, it's like any other fundamentalist worldview. You cannot absorb new information because it's too scary. You feel threatened because of who you are.
Right.
And that makes it really, really hard. And so this isn't just me. It's a whole generation of us now who tried that kind of, you know, very low protein, high carbohydrate, completely wrong fats, vegetarian, vegan, you know, somewhere in that realm of diet. We fell apart. And one by one, we had to figure out what to do. And it meant losing friends, and it means getting into huge fights with people. We couldn't figure out why it wasn't working.
Sure.
And people like me who were so ideologically driven, I mean, I did it till my body was destroyed. And, you know, people that I knew gave up 10 years earlier are in a lot better shape than I am. They had still had, you know, some energy left in their bodies. They still had joints that were working, you know.
Sure.
The sooner they stopped, you know, the more chance there was for recovery. This is another reason I wrote the book, is I know that there are other teenage girls out there who want to care, you know, desperately about the planet and about animals. They're targeted by PETA to be vegetarians.
Right.
So they put the cute, fluffy animals in the girls' magazines. And I know where this leads. And I want them to have counter-information so they can fight this off and make a better decision. because you're not saving animals by doing this, and you're not saving the planet. But you need way more information to be able to make that decision than anyone's going to tell them. So,
and we've got companies like Monsanto, where they're destroying the planet because of the way they're doing agriculture totally wrong with no sustainability, which is another issue.
Right, right, exactly.
What do you say to those vegans that will be, you know, maybe listening to this recording, that have been strict vegans for 10 years, 15 years? I've met a couple even that have made it to 21 or 22 years, and at the moment still believe that they're quite healthy.
Until the very last day that I was a vegan, I knew I had serious health problems. I never would have believed that it had to do with veganism. I would have said to the end, nope, this is great, this is working for me. And it wasn't until that very last day that I had to face facts. And I had to try it, and I ate some meat, and everything changed dramatically. So I think you're only going to reach people who are that ideologically bound when they're desperate.
And I do see that, and of course, the word that you use is a word I use in my lectures a lot, and that is ignorance, which simply means, it doesn't mean you're stupid, you could have a phenomenal IQ, you might even be a medical doctor or a PhD, it simply means you don't know what you don't know, and that some of what you don't know is fairly important for your health, and therefore that ignorance is actually, you know, harmful to you.
Right.
But if somebody is so certain that the vegan lifestyle is what made them well, then they get to exactly where you say that up until that last minute, they just don't realize it. And so would you say, for example, that it would be really beneficial for some people that don't really, they're on the edge, but isn't the vegan really, really good? Would they be benefited by trying for a short amount of time, like 1 month, to eat a really healthy omnivorous diet, which of course they'd have to learn what that is because it doesn't mean eating garbage, and see whether their body tells them how much better it feels?
I would highly recommend that. And it means understanding a whole new set of principles, both ecological principles, nutritional principles, economic principles. This really gets to the real bottom of our culture and everything that's gone wrong for the last 6,000 years. So you have to understand about grass-feeding animals. You have to understand why pasture is important. You have to understand that perennial polycultures are how life produces more life and protects itself, that clearing the land for agriculture is an inherently destructive process. We've run through every continent. There is no topsoil left. This is not a diet that's going to save the planet. But if we could repair those perennial polycultures, put it back into prairie and into forest, and then eat from inside those living communities, we then have a chance to save our planet. But the vegan diet is exactly the opposite. And this was what I did not understand. And this is the fact that nobody is talking about in this culture, the level of destruction that's inherent to agriculture. We've run through every continent at this point. You know, agriculture started in 6 different places around the globe, and it's become total at this point. We've skinned the planet alive. That's what agriculture is. You take a piece of land, you clear every living thing off it, and I mean down to the bacteria, and then you plant it to human use. So this is, it's biotic cleansing is what it is. Now, the reverse of that is you have what are called perennial polycultures, and basically it's, you know, forests, prairies, wetlands, savannas. It's what nature does to protect topsoil and to build topsoil, because topsoil is the basis of life. Any way of life that is destroying the basis of life itself cannot be called sustainable. It really can only be called insane, and that's what agriculture is. And we don't want to hear that because we live in an agricultural society. More than that, we live in an industrial culture, which means that the vast numbers of us are never going to have a relationship with animals, with plants, with soil. We have no idea the destruction inherent in, say, a bowl of rice versus a plate of beef.
Right.
We don't have a clue. So all we know is what we're being told by other ideological vegetarians who also don't know the truth about it. I mean, we keep being told all these things about, you know, 18 pounds of grain and all this water. Well, that is true in factory farms. That is true if you're going to feed them grain. The native diet of a cow is not grain, it's grass.
Of course.
So animals, you know, like ruminants that are on some kind of savanna or grassland, that is a pattern that's been going on for, you know, millions of years. And that is sustainable because that is nature's pattern. How humans participate in this is we eat the animals eat the plants, and in the end the soil eats us all. And this is a cycle. And
right.
We need to participate in those cycles. I mean, one thing that I really try to emphasize when I'm talking to people who are starting to question their vegetarianism, which I hope gives them solace, is that we really have two choices. We can be the part of the death that's killing all life, or we can be a part of the death that's the cycle of life. So we can dominate or we can participate, but there's no way out of death. There's no non-death option. So those are our only choices. We can do it well or we can do it destructively. That was something that I had a terrible time facing because I had so vilified and demonized the idea of death. I could not face how much death was, you know, in my bowl of rice or in my lettuce. And, you know, one of the big things that I tried to do is to grow a lot of my own food. And learning how to garden threw so much of my worldview into a complete collapse because there was so much death involved in everything. And here I was trying to be this great vegan, and it was like, I got to kill slugs. How am I going to do this? You know, I got to kill bugs. I mean, what am I going to do with these bugs, you know? And then even just clearing the ground to make a garden was like, you know, ants. I could watch them die. I moved a rock just to make my garden bed a little bigger, and, like, you know, an entire colony of ants was over. And it was horrible to watch. It was like, I love these little creatures, and I'm not supposed to be the person who's killing anything. And there was nothing I could do in that garden that didn't involve death. And that was really hard. And there were moments where I was like, I'm not going to garden. I'm just going to buy vegetables. And it's like, who are you fooling? You know, you can go to the produce aisle in the grocery store, but if that soil had any life in it, you're killing things.
And so not only that, but, of course, the farms from which you got those vegetables were nowhere near as nice as even you were. So killing even more vegetables. That's killing even more various different insects than you would in the much nicer way you're doing it yourself.
I know. So the whole thing ended up just sort of in a state of, you know, sort of ethical collapse, and I kept pushing my knowledge aside, pushing it aside. And then there's, you know, the whole question about fertilizing the soil, and I had to admit that the soil wanted to eat manure and blood and bones.
So yes.
No, I don't want to eat animals. The plants are carnivorous, all of them. They need animals. So then it was all these debates in my head. Well, I can get manure from a nice farm. I can go to the feed store and just not read the label. But I knew what was in those boxes. You know, it was blood and bone. I was like, that's what the plants want. So my choices were, you know, I could eat these myself, or I can pass them from a plant and then eat them. Either way, again, there was no way out of that cycle. And it was really hard.
That's interesting, because until you said that, I did a lot of organic gardening when I was a child, and I've done some recently, but I've been so busy helping people get well, I don't do very much gardening anymore. But when I take a look at all of the garden supplies of the organic things that I would buy, you are talking about dried blood, bone meal, feather meal, shrimp meal.
Right.
And, of course, these are where all the nutrients are, and just like you say, they're coming from the same places that the vegan society wouldn't want killed. But, hey, if we don't have them from someplace, we can't feed the plants either.
Right, exactly. And at this point, I mean, all those staple grains that the vegans rely on, it's fossil fuel, it's all nitrogen based from, natural gas or oil. And because we've run through the topsoil, and there's no way that you can grow that amount. There's not enough animal manure in the world to feed all that, you know, all that grain. So if you're eating any grain, you're eating fossil fuel in a stalk. And that's been true since the 50s, since the Green Revolution. Obviously, this is never going to be sustainable. And it was another thing that I just couldn't bear to face when I was a vegan. So we need a way bigger picture. We need to understand the destructive nature of agriculture. And we really need to be repairing those perennial polycultures. Some of the calculations show that if we took all the agricultural land east of the Mississippi, we put it back into grasslands, back into pasture, the United States would immediately become a net carbon sink. And that's what everybody's still driving SUVs, okay, because those plants would sequester the carbon, they would build the topsoil, and all of that becomes a carbon sink. So one way to look at it is to say, well, for 6,000 years, we've destroyed, and now we need to reverse that process, and we need to repair, and it means we need to help the world go back to what it wants to be, which is either a prairie, a wetland, or a forest. We could still do that. It's not too late for this planet, but we need to understand the underlying template here that
right.
we have destroyed by doing agriculture.
Yep, and of course I agree with you on the Price-Pottinger Foundation. These are all of our principles that we promote, but when the vast majority of the money and funding is in the huge conglomerates, you know, Archer Daniels, Midland, Monsanto, et cetera, which make their money by continuing to destroy the planet, by farming all of these soil areas to death, even further death, they're already dead, and then on top of that, managed to get the government to subsidize the growing of their corn and grains so they're getting paid more than it's even worth to be able to destroy the planet.
Yep. Yeah, people need to understand all of that. They need to understand the reign of corporate power right now on the planet, and exactly that the taxpayers are subsidizing all of this. to our great detriment as, you know, a living community.
Yep.
I mean, Michael Pollan goes into this in The Omnivore's Dilemma. I go into it in my book. Another really great book is Richard Manning's book, Against the Grain. And we need to understand the political economy of this because the vegetarians have it completely wrong.
But they're ignorant. They don't know that.
Well, no, they don't. But, you know, they think that, I mean, it's argumental as well. They're growing all that grain to feed it to animals, and that's not true. They're growing all that grain because the grain cartels, there's six grain cartels that control essentially the entire world's food supply. And those six companies have a monopoly, and they're able to drive the price down below the cost of production. That means that no matter how much farmers produce, they're never going to make a living. So they produce more. Every year they have to produce more. So it's made this mountain of, you know, excess corn, for instance. And then the taxpayer picks up the difference, so the grain cartels walk away with billions of our tax dollars, and that it's just enough to keep the farmer in business, but it means every year they're producing more just to keep their heads above water. That's why there's these huge mountains of corn. At that point, the stuff is so cheap that, you know, horrible people realized in the 50s, well, if we stuff it into animals, we can make them grow really fast. And that's when factory farming develops. But it's not the native diet of any of those animals.
No.
It's only done because the Green Revolution and the grain cartels produce such a huge excess. And that's what needs to stop.
Yep.
And the other problem, of course, which is what your original question was about people's health, it completely changes the content of the fats in the animal products and even to a certain extent the proteins, and it makes them really bad for us to eat. And this is one of the reasons why health in America is so bad. Even products that should be good for us, like meat and animal protein and animal fat, you know, there's way too many omega-6s, nowhere near enough omega-3s, because they shouldn't be eating that grain either.
That's right.
So, you know, your original question being, what about somebody, you know, would you suggest somebody try eating a really good diet? Yes, and they need to understand what makes an animal product a good animal product.
Yes.
What makes a dairy product a good, you know, milk or cheese, a butter? What makes a good beef? What makes good chicken? And the answer is that it has to be grass-fed.
Absolutely.
Not grain-fed. It has to be grass-fed.
Absolutely. In my lectures, I always say the most important thing is for everybody to remember that if it is true, which of course we both know it is, that what you eat affects your health, then you must interpolate one generation away and say, therefore, what you eat, what it ate, also affects your health. And if we're supposed to be eating these things, such as meats and et cetera, which we are, then we must eat those meats that have been eating what they're supposed to eat. And as you said, that's basically grass and weeds for most of these animals that are instead being fed corn.
Right. And that entire process could transform this continent back into something that would be life-affirming and life-sustaining, which is to say a prairie and a forest. And we could sequester all that carbon, and we could save the planet. One calculation is that if everywhere on the planet, if this was done, if all the agricultural land was put back into perennial polyculture, within 10 years, we could sequester all the carbon that has been released since the beginning of the industrial age. It is not too late to stop global warming, but nobody is talking about the real problem and the real way to solve it. So that's another reason I wrote the book is, you know, my planet is dying. It's being drawn and quartered.
Yep.
And I want the environmental movement. These are the people who should understand this and they should care about it. We are fighting for the wrong things because we don't understand. It's not that our values are wrong. It's that we don't understand, and we need to understand this as a concept.
Well, there's a lot of money out there pushing us to understand what it wants us to understand instead of the facts. One of the big things that I often hear from vegans and vegetarians that come to me in my office for help is that they respect the earth, they respect the planet, and they don't want to live a lifestyle that does not respect the earth and the planet. And what I always say is that if you think about which populations on the planet Earth, either current or past, were probably, I'm actually asking the vegan or vegetarian, which ones do you think were probably the most highly respectful of our planet? Would you agree with me that would include the original, you know, before we destroy them, American Indian, the New Zealand Maori, all of the traditional populations?
Yep.
And without hesitation, they always say yes. And I go, do you realize that none of them were vegetarian, much less vegan, and that they maybe gave thanks to their spirits or whatever to hopefully have a good hunt to get this meat that is going to sustain their tribe and keep them healthy? And they never thought of that.
Right. Right. Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of history there that, again, we are not taught. You know, that's all just the far distant past. Terrible things might have happened, but oh, well, you know, now we've conquered the world and this is the food we eat. And all of that needs to be put back together, especially for people who have a political mind and who want to be living in a good way, you know, to understand it, to understand the level of destruction, to understand, you know, who those people were and are, you know, and still their, you know, their claims to try to get their land back and to try to, you know, repair their cultures and all of that, all the solidarity work we need to be doing if we're, you know, conscientious white people. But, yes, that respect for their cultures and the way that they have supported themselves, you know, sometimes you talk to, you know, some of the tribal people in Africa, they've been living the same way basically for 4 million years,
yep.
since even before we were human.
Yep.
And that, you know, like the Fulani, and, you know, that's it. It's grass-fed beef. That's what they've been eating. And, you know, some fish out of the river nearby. Well, the rivers have all been destroyed for rice cultivation now.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, it's the end of the story. All the hunter-gatherers have been destroyed. There's 46 remaining tribes left. And it's all for the benefit of the agriculturalists. And I really wish people who had more of a political mindset could really question on that deeper level. They'd come up with different answers.
So if you had to, which is extremely difficult, if you had to make a little, and I'm not going to give you a time, so 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, whatever, synopsis of the most direct message you want to give to strict vegetarians or vegans to try and help them to understand that what they are doing is mostly destroying their own health, and they really should look at that if they would like to continue on this planet and help other people and be a good person. How would you phrase that?
I think that the most, well, on a personal level, I think the most important thing that they can do is to connect to local farms if they live in an urban or suburban area and try to find somebody who's doing pasture raising. And buy all their food from those farms. So grass-fed beef, pasture-raised chicken or duck. They can also learn to hunt and themselves or fish if they live in an area where there are still fish, and really participate in the life of the land in that regard as well. A lot of the farms have days where you can go and help, and I think that's really important to be that involved with your food supply. You can go and learn to slaughter, and I think that everybody needs to do that at some point in their lives. The other thing that you know, if they need more help getting there, think about Iraq. When you picture Iraq, we've all seen, you know, terrible photographs of the war. But what it looks like is basically a desert. 6,000 years ago, that was not a desert. That was the beginning of agriculture, and it was oak savanna, and it was forest so deep that sunlight never touched the ground. That is what agriculture does. We are looking at the end point of all of this. So on the one hand, you've got, you know, semi-desert and scrub and salt flats. 25% of Pakistan now is like literally just a salt flat from agriculture. And then look at the Midwest, you know, miles and miles and miles of corn. It used to be 12 feet deep with topsoil, and now it can only be measured in inches. All the rivers have been drained. There are no wetlands in Indiana. You wouldn't have thought that there ever was a swamp there, but there was. All gone for corn and wheat and soy. This is not a sustainable process. Now, then you can go and look at, you know, beautiful farms where they have returned land to perennial polyculture, and you can see how much life there is, and you can see all the birds that are nesting in the grasses, and you can see how happy the cows are. And that is not to say that they don't die. We need to face that everything dies.
Oh, yeah.
But we're all a part of that. We will die too someday, and the grass will eat us. And we need to embrace that and be very humble before everything that will die to feed us. But you can be part of that, and you can do it in a good way. So I would say on a personal level, they need to get involved in local food, local farms, finding the good farms. It's not that hard anymore. There's eatwild.com, Joe Robinson's site. There's all kinds of places where you can find local farms in your area that are doing grass feeding.
And, of course, there's the Price Pottinger site.
Absolutely, yes. I'm so sorry. All these sites you can find, it's really easy now to find, you know, good, grass-fed, sustainable farms. And go talk to the farmers and go meet the animals and go put your hands on the grass and feel that life. And I think that that is, on a personal level, one of the most important things that we can do is to reconnect and then get involved politically, in whatever that means to you, whatever your passion is, you know, whatever you love, it is now under assault.
That's
the planet
very, very
is being
true.
Killed, and we've got to get involved with whatever our passions are and our talents. We've got to direct them toward doing what we can to stop corporate power.
Yep.
You know, all the problems that are, you know, that are just racking, you know, human society right now and the life of the planet. And we need everybody on board with this because we don't have a lot of time left. So anyway, that would be my prescription.
would you be worried that if people, let's say, went out and, well, let's say, well, they were on a dairy farm, And next door to the dairy farm was a cattle ranch. And so they actually got to maybe feed the cattle, maybe know some of them a little, and realize that they're people in their own ways. And now, of course, when you know an animal, you want to have it killed to be eaten even less.
And it can be a hard moment. Yep. And I raise my own chickens. I raise my own meat birds. And it's an emotional skill that I think people have had for millions of years because we had to kill to eat. And now we get our food at the grocery store, whether we're omnivores or vegetarians. We have no idea how much death is embodied in any of that. And that's true whether you are eating just vegetables or whether you're eating meat. I mean, it wasn't until I gardened that I saw how much death was in every single head of lettuce. And it was horrifying to me. It's not horrifying anymore. There is always that moment of sadness. And it's not important that it feel good. It is important that we feel it, that we stay connected to it, and that we see that there is joy throughout, even in these moments of suffering, that every single thing that's alive loves its life, and that we are all participants in a kind of cosmic contented joy that is our birthright. And we are all taking turns feeding each other. It's like there's this great tribe called Carbon, and we are all a part of it. And that means that my body is a gift to someone else when I die. And it, you know, the cow takes her turn, I take my turn. Whatever our place is on that wheel, we all have to take our turns. There is no way out of that.
That's a very good way to put it. We all take our turns feeding each other because I don't think all of the vegans out there, but I could be wrong, are furious that a mountain lion has the audacity to go and kill a gazelle to be able to feed its young and have you know and have little lions and bring them up. They would probably say, well, that's part of nature. That's part of the way things are supposed to be. But humans aren't supposed to do that, which of course is where they're wrong.
Right.
Well,
and I would say in my experience that a lot of vegans and vegetarians are actually quite uneasy about animal predation.
Uh-huh.
That if we had it in our power to stop it, we probably would have. And that's just a deep ignorance about how predators are necessary. The fact that cows are eating grass does not mean that they are vegetarian. 10% of their diet is insects, and insects are animals.
Yep.
So, you know, we can be very clear. They need that 10% in their diets, or they get sick too. So there really isn't anything in life that's a strictly vegetarian. We are all eating something, bacteria, all kinds of living creatures are, you know, part of what makes us healthy. I mean, you know, somewhere between 5 and 9 pounds of your body weight is bacteria that's helping you.
Yes, correct.
And some of them we eat. I mean, that's what's happening inside a cow. In fact, she's feeding the grass to the bacteria. The bacteria eats the grass, and then the cow eats the bacteria, and it's a nice little symbiotic relationship. You could say that the cows have the bacteria has colonized the cow. You could say that the cow has domesticated the bacteria. I like to think this is interdependence. This is how all of nature works. And I didn't know that when I was a vegetarian. I tried really hard not to know it. So that was my mistake. And I think it's a mistake that's ideologically a part of the vegetarian myth. And again, it's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is I was trying to counter that.
Well, Liare Keith, I greatly thank you. I wish you and your book absolutely the best of it. I don't want to say luck, because it shouldn't. I don't want it to be luck. I want it to be getting the facts out and undoing some of the ignorance that's out there, because we really need this for the planet and for the health of a lot of people that don't have health.
Well, thank you for your work too at Price Bottinger. It's just that stuff is crucial to me in my recovery. Just crucial. I can't thank you enough for, you know, keeping the work of Weston Price alive all these years.
Well, we will keep on doing that. You will keep on with your book, and we will be in touch again. And I thank
all
you
right.
very, very much.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.